Gosh. Lost in the Stunch.
Lost in the Stunch. Lost in the Stunch.
Hello, children, and welcome back to Lost in the Stunch. I am your host, Alex Stunch, and you are tuned in to ModSnapRadio.com. Be sure to stop by ShopModSnap.com to get yourself a spiffy new t-shirt. And also, go to YouTube.com/StaunchTV and subscribe to Staunch TV. Tonight, we look back at times actors turned to musicians. Now, not all of them, of course, just a few of my obscure favorites. Plus, we talk Bill and Ted Face the Music. I give my final little take, my one-take review on that film, which I loved, by the way. And we also look back at the forgotten Bill and Ted TV show. Anybody else remember that? Let me know at DerryTigers@gmail.com. That is D-E-R-R-Y Tigers@gmail.com. Plus, during that segment, our little Bill and Ted talk, we have a pretty big announcement regarding next week's episode. So stick around for that. Plus, tonight we also have some readings from the masterworks of Sir Dan Pretzer from his book, Add to Cart, Reviews of Products I've Never Used. Plus, tracks from Sunflower Bean, Bob Seger, and more. Kicking things off, we have a tune from Cocktail Twins. Don't go anywhere, folks. Bill and Ted Face the Music. What a long journey it took. And goddamn, was it worth the wait? Yes, it definitely was. Especially, you know, those the later hours whenever the movie was premiering. I was one of many, many dudes who pre-ordered. And, you know, being down here in South Texas, I got tricked into thinking it was showing at midnight like every other idiot out here. So I got to stay up till 2 in the morning to check it out, and I was not disappointed. I don't have much else to do right now. I'm a victim of this pandemic, being on furlough and such. Just another dude, I guess. But my one take, what can I say about the film? I absolutely loved it. Everything I expected and more. It was actually better than I thought it was going to be. Now, the first trailer that came out, I was a little worried, you know. I think a lot of people were. It kind of looked a little lower rent. They managed to use, like, all the big green screen shots in the trailer, and it kind of seemed that's all it was. But, you know, in a lot of ways, I guess, there's a bit of overuse, if you want to call it that, of the green screen. But I think it all works. I mean, what the hell? Anybody else remember Bill and Ted 2? I mean, all those, it was basically matte painting half the time, you know. Which, you know, I'm not complaining. I love this all. And that's just one complaint that I've heard from people that seem to be a deal breaker for some. I just don't get it. That's not what it's about. This is catching up with the dudes and seeing how hard they've been working this whole time. It really does all feel very genuine. Another big complaint I've heard from people is that Keanu Reeves looks tired and that he looks kind of out of it. And I mean, come on, but Ted literally says that he's tired. I'm tired, dude. You know, both of these guys are Bill and Ted grown up exactly how you'd expect. Anyone who complains is just bogus. And it was great to see Death. How awesome was that? I loved how they made him have a little falling out. Him, you know, that huge ego. And I wish I kind of wish they did like a little flashback scene or something with that. That would have been so cool just to see Death full on ego, you know, power trip rock star mode. And I also loved how, you know, vulnerable he was in the end, because of course he is. I kind of wish he had a bit more to do after that. You know, he kind of got his one big scene and kind of got lost in the shuffle in that third act. That third act I thought was a little jumbled, but, you know, it got the point across. It's everything I wanted to see again. And it was so awesome seeing the song being played, you know, the song we've all been waiting to hear. I thought it sounded a little Coldplay, but I like some Coldplay, so I don't care. but that was a cool shot at the end with them up there just kicking ass, you know. And I, for one, am down for a part 4 featuring either the dudes in the main roles or at least a cameo. And because I did really like the daughters. They're awesome. You know, there seems to be a big retcon issue, because I remember, in Bogus Journey, one of the babies had, like, the ZZ Top beard, you know, but who cares, they're from the future, it was more enlightened here, obviously, little girl babies can have beard wigs, who cares, I dug it, that seems like something they'd still do now, put on a wig for no reason, you know, it all just works, and my big announcement, let me just get to it now, regarding Bill and Ted Face the Music. Next week, we're going to have Brian Plato on the show, who was William Sadler's stand-in for this film, for Bill and Ted Face the Music. This guy was in full death gear, just completely, there's side-by-side pictures. If you go and look right now on Lost in the Staunch on my Facebook page, they will be up. I'll go ahead and post them right now, this second. It's Brian and William Sadler in their matching makeup, you know, taking photos, and there's a really cool picture of him asleep on set. And you know, I was part of all these Bill and Ted Facebook pages leading up to the big premiere, and he was nice enough to talk to us. And not only that, he is gathering up a lot of the extras from the film, and we're all gonna have a big meeting, and we're all gonna have a discussion about how amazing it must have been to work on that film. So badass. I'm very glad to have them on. Thank you. Thank you so much, Brian, for getting this together. Very exciting stuff. For any fan of Bill and Ted, I hope you join me for that. It's going to be quite the wild ride. It will be quite an excellent time, I assure you. But before we get into that, one thing I want to like to talk about with you fine folks is the forgotten Bill and Ted TV show. Anybody else remember that? And Evan Richards from that movie, he played Bill. And, of course, Evan Richards was also in Rock and Roll High School Forever. And, of course, I made an award-winning documentary about that film, Forever, The Untold Story of Rock and Roll High School Forever, which you can watch right now over on youtube.com/staunchTV. Please subscribe and go and check out my documentary and let me know what you think about it. The guy who played drums in that movie for the band The Eradicators, of course, was also in the Bill and Ted TV show, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventures. Let's take a most complex yet inspiring adventure through time. Some TV shows last forever. Others live on in the TV wasteland. Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure was released February 17, 1989. The film received generally positive reviews and was a huge success at the box office, grossing $40.5 million against $6.5 million.
Le Gas.
So naturally, a sequel was put on the fast track. Sorta. The team behind Bill and Ted is the essential trio of Scott Krupp, who was the producer, and writers Chris Matheson and Ed Solomon, who would go on to work in every film installment from there on out. And before the sequel Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey was released, a deal for an animated series was made, and Hanna-Barbera produced 13 episodes, featuring returning actors Keanu Reeves, Alex Winter, George Carlin, and even had Little Richard doing some voices. Hell, even Budnick was cast as Deacon. And the series featured the dudes in fun adventures like exploiting time travel to replace a broken vase, and even meeting Babe Ruth, Dracula, and Harriet Tubman in the same episode. A second season was then produced by Deke Entertainment, this time featuring actors Evan Richards and Christopher Kennedy voicing the title roles.
I'm Bill S. Preston, Esquire.
And I am Ted Theodore Logan.
Together, we are Wild Stallions.
Greetings, excellent ones.
The plots devolve into things like shrinking people for interspace-esque adventures and traveling into video games or some shit. I kind of got sidetracked, to be honest. Star Evan Richards had this to say about working on the cartoon series. They asked us to do the cartoon after we shot the 7 episodes. It was a fun, easygoing experience. Also a chance for us to continue playing the characters we enjoyed. I thought they got even more surreal and experimental than the live-action series or movies, which wasn't a bad thing, indeed. You can't really screw up the characters of Bill and Ted. It's just a matter of continually finding the magic and chemistry that was created in the first film. However, they decided to wait to release the show until Bogus Journey made more of a profit in the box office. Bogus Journey would end up making about $38 million on a $20 million budget in the States, and while the studio planned on a bigger box office, in the summer of 1992, the show was finally released. I'm a big fan of Evan Richards, and I really do enjoy his performance in this. I mean, there's all-around great performances from everybody involved. But I feel Bill and Ted are kind of presented as ultimate parodies in this show, with the dumb aspect cranked up to 11, you know, doing things out of character at times, like maintaining jobs, but, you know, who cares? There are times you forget you're even watching a show, and it feels like the Bill and Ted we all know and love. You can really tell that the dudes cared and tried hard to respect the show. That might have been harder to do with the TV format as far as the writing goes, but there's some really fun and innovative stuff happening here. The pilot remained unaired, and the to-be-continued storyline was left open. It dealt with the guys having to write and perform the big song, but not having an amp to do so, the song aspect being the only real connection to the original plot. The fake Rufus is also pretty funny to look at, and even the time-traveling phone booth kind of has a whole new set of rules here. The dudes use it to travel into magazines, and even into a soap opera, to stop a cross-dressing doctor. We have some top-notch shit here, folks.
I don't feel angry. I feel pretty.
Ted, the doctor dude is tinkering with his sexual orientation.
There's some good laughs throughout, though. Totally.
One of you takes my daughter Bernadette to the school dance.
Bernie Kielsen?
Oh, you know Muffin?
You take her, Bill.
No way, Ted. You take her.
No way, man. You take her.
Ted, we need that amp.
I know, Bill, so take her.
Ted, I have a reputation.
Bill, so do I.
She's totally gross.
Well, okay, that's it. Come on, let's go. Out of here.
And the show has some pretty intuitive gags.
Dude, look at you. Dude, look at you. We're totally pale.
Minutes, exactly. Let's go.
Hey, what's going
but
on?
It's amazing to see what the cast, and especially the hard-working crew, were able to do on such a budget. I think rewatching it now, I tend to be a little too harsh on such things like, you know, budgetary concerns and production and, you know, but honestly, it holds up as a great piece of nostalgic TV, mixing the fish out of water aspect with science fiction. Not much would be revealed about the making of this series. Executive producer Clifton Campbell stated, "I feel we did 7 good episodes." The series came out at a point when audiences had essentially been flooded with Bill and Ted, but I felt we were able to give the audience a different take on it. He goes on to explain, Chris Matheson and Ed Sullivan, who wrote the original movie and sequel, had an idea for the series that Fox wasn't too excited about. Then Darren Star, who's responsible for Beverly Hills 90210, came up with an idea that Fox did get excited about, and the show was on again. We felt that having Bill and Ted go back and forth in time each week would get stale. So while we knew we had to keep the phone booth and the time travel element, we also knew we had to challenge the aspect. Star Evan Richards would have this to say about his time on the show. "I was a fan of Bill and Ted and was enamored by the charm and uniqueness of the two characters and their situation, as everyone else was. I had read the feature film script and wasn't sure how it was going to play. The initial perception of the script was that Bill and Ted was very much like the Sean Penn role from Fast Times at Ridgemont High, divided into two. But Bill and Ted weren't surfers. They were just excited. I actually watched the movie repeatedly to familiarize myself with the essence of Alex and Keanu's approach, to try and gain insight into what motivated their logic and speech pattern. At one point, I ran into Keanu in the street, who offered me some advice, to basically have fun with it and never take them, Bill and Ted, too seriously. Be excellent, in a nutshell. I have to say that I truly immersed myself into the Bill and Ted's world. Not saying that I went insane or anything, just wanted to have a great time making the best television series possible. How cool to act that offbeat and get away with it. There was a lot of competition for the part. I had them all murdered." That was a joke, of course. "However, at a certain point, I was building confidence about getting the role, only because I felt I was connecting with it so much. But you never know in this business. So I was extremely shocked when my agent called to say that I had it. I tell you this much, it was a great day. You have to understand that when I auditioned, I walked into the producer's office as Bill, not as Evan Richards. I had to prove to them that I could pull this off. The best way was to never let the illusion down. One of my good friends at the time was auditioning for the part of Ted. I was hoping we'd get to work together on the series. Ironically enough, his name was Chris. So when they told me Chris got the role, I thought we had the gig together. Then I found out about Chris Kennedy, which worked out just as well. This was the first big break Chris got. He was from Canada, where we filmed the series. Vancouver, for the Los Angeles Valley." The ratings at the time were actually not that bad. We needed to be able to grow creatively, and if anything, we needed a larger order of episodes to do that. I mean, 7 episodes is barely scratching the surface. We had many, many more exciting ideas to bring to the show. Perhaps we would have been able to do so if Alex and Keanu were part of it. I would have totally welcomed that. There was discussion on the production side of it that Fox didn't pick up the show for another season and that the producer wanted to take the show for a cable network series. In hindsight, that would have been a great move. Understandably, they have more to risk than to lose, namely their sponsors, if they were to move to cable. You know, we could have also gone into syndication if we had enough episodes. Most orders for new syndicated shows are something crazy like 50 episodes. That would have been great. The reason the television version of Weird Science did so well is because it was on cable, and that had a large episode order, you know, taking advantage of that like I'm talking about. Don't forget, other John Hughes movie to television series like Ferris Bueller and Uncle Buck were on network broadcast. Once again, they had short lives like our show. We should have been on cable. I spoke to Alex after he dogged us on the Arsenio Hall show. I confronted him about his negative statements regarding the series. He was a gentleman about it and explained that he was hurt that he was never asked to participate in the series. I told him that if I had known about his inquiries, I would have pushed to include his involvement. We've talked to each other off and on through the years, and I've seen his films like Freaked and Fever, and I think he's a very talented man. Sure, there was disappointment by the ultimate outcome, but not by the work that was done. The series exists now, for the fans, for prosperity and fun. Nothing ever dies. The world of Worlds is to recycle. I can easily see the studio doing another version of Bill and Ted 10 years from now, like the Batman franchise or Brady Bunch. The legacy of that show will never end, not in a million trillion years. See, when something works and it's that good, and there's money to be made from it, and fresh ways to approach it, then it will be revived. So that said, long live Bill and Ted. Hey, and I guess Evan was right. But ultimately, you know, as far as ratings go, it was a most righteous failure. So there you have it. In the spectrum of film to TV adaptations, let's be honest, this might be one of the best of all time. I mean, there was some pretty big misses there. Stay tuned. And you know, I kind of always felt it was a damn shame they didn't treat this show as more of a sequel or even taking place in between the two movies. But you know, things like not mentioning the fact that they've been to hell or had already met their soulmates were just, you know, not mentioned. Although I suppose there is a kind of connection with the Deke series and the live action show. And I still say that the sketch comedy series assaulted nuts.
Aren't you afraid just a little bit?
Are you kidding with that weirdo makeup?
It is not makeup. I am naturally pale.
And Tales from the Crypt are in the same Bill and Ted universe.
So then I was over in India, you know, and I ripped up this little monsoon. Man, I must have reaped hundreds that day. Hundreds, just like that.
Really?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Of course, I normally prefer to take souls one at a time, but, you know, I had taken some vacation days, and it was the end of the month, and so, you know how it goes.
The show still remains a moderate cult classic, and testament of how a dedicated crew and actors on a tight rope can manage to produce a fresh and fun take on an existing property. It is possible. I'm glad I got this insight. I was able to reform my opinion on the show, as I found myself being underwhelmed upon rewatching recently, somehow missing its greatness. However, not everyone shared these sentiments. Come on, Alex.
And isn't there a live-action series coming?
Yeah, there is. There is a live-action series coming.
Are you going to be in that?
No.
Oh, no.
They didn't really let us get involved with the script. They didn't let us, any of us, get involved with the creation of it. And so none of us, like the writers and me and Keanu, were really involved enough to make it what we wanted.
Yeah.
You know? And they were like, well, you know, here's what you're going to do. Here's what it's going to be about. And it's going to be like Porky's. Are you interested? No, thanks. Pass.
Have you seen any of this new live-action one?
Yeah.
How does it look, is it?
Well, I don't know. Can I say this is going to be on this network? It's not, is it?
It doesn't matter. You can just tell the truth. That's
okay.
That's best.
I'm going to stare right into that camera and tell it. It stinks, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know what to say. I could have lied. They really missed the boat.
Hit, I hit, I
Oh, hell yeah. What does it take to go from being an actor to a musician? You know, despite the varying degrees of success, what do all these guys have in common? I mean, you'd think if someone went out of their way to interrupt their busy film schedule or drop an album, they have a good reason, right? Now, there's endless examples of this type of thing, and for the most part, they're usually done respectfully, tastefully, done for all the right reasons, and are remembered fondly as a testament to said artist. But you know, sometimes they're not. Now, this video can go on forever if I were to just go off on actors who thought they had what it took to conquer the music industry. I'll be focusing on some of my favorite actors growing up who gave it a shot. The earliest of which probably being from our Lord and Savior, Joey Lawrence.
Why is my baby blue? Can't see the colors of a sunny day.
I remember him hitting it pretty big in the 90s, or at least I think it did. Being like 5 years old at the time, at least, it all seemed pretty much larger than life. And in my eyes, this shit was the epitome of badass. I remember my sister having this dude's poster on her door. And I also remember seeing this guy every week on TV. What the hell was he doing bouncing around in empty factories with tattered clothing? Surely he can afford new pants, am I right? Joey had a few hits from what I remember. Even doing one of those stranded in a strobe light factory music videos that were so prevalent in the 90s. And a lot of this stuff, for what it is, ain't too bad. Alright, I actually really dig a lot of this stuff. But Joey clearly has talent. Love it or hate it. And in fact, music was always his first passion. And it's not like he waited around and did it when his popularity began to fade. He released his debut at the age of 16, at the height of his success, even writing or co-writing nearly all of the tracks, which is just basically unheard of in this genre of music. His first single, Nothing My Love Can't Fix, reached number 10 on the Billboard Top 40 Mainstream and number 19 on the Billboard Hot 100. This early success, in coordination with the rising MTV network, got him some nice spots on their spring break events, and he even did Arsenio and Top of the Pops. Joey would go on to keep releasing music, using whatever platform he could to showcase his singing and dancing, albeit more family-friendly this time around. He would go on to release music with his brothers Andy and Matthew Lawrence as well, under the moniker Still 3, and then would go on to release songs with a more club-based sound. Joey's debut remains a snapshot of the 90s that was very, very much of its time. And to be honest, this shit kind of slaps. The youngest brother, Andy, would also go on to make music and release a solo album with a heavy Dave Matthews influence. He also just released his first directorial effort, Money Plane, which is just insane. In retrospect, this isn't so crazy. I mean, they're all very talented boys. And with real passion for music, they're gonna do it any way they could, so more power to them. The most important of all of this being that they are talented. What about when you're not so talented? David Faustino would release Ballistics under his alter ego Grandmaster D-Lil in 1992, which would spawn the single I Told Ya.
Here I come, straight down to business, now you know I just begun. I come with peace, I come with knowledge, not the gun. And when it comes to trouble with my mind, I overcome the chaos and confusion, cause you know I'm not the one.
Faustino's rap alter ego would of course also make an appearance on Married with Children in some form. Who can forget that? Faustino and his crew would start a weekly nightclub also called Ballistics, where Faustino would host parties and rap battles, attracting some big names, even gaining support from Speed, Eazy-E's former DJ. The club would gain popularity and eventually be hosted out of the famous Whiskey A Go-Go, which is featured on the project's cover. Not much was made of all of this, and it kind of just disappeared over time, but hey, at least he would join the ranks of 90s rappers who used the word Jimmy Hat. And to be honest, this shit kind of slaps.
Little D standing tall at 5'3".
Yeah, but I'm as dope as can be. I'm the H-I-G-A-G-E, no matter what it be. I'm kicking a funky style with my R-H-Y-M-E. So come on, y'all, and see me. Not on the deli TV as Grandmaster B-E or even Bud Bunny, but as the funky Romantica flow, and that's the way it has to be.
And all right, I'm being a little harsh. What Faustino lacked in raw talent, he made up for with passion. He was clearly all about this stuff. And again, he was going to make music one way or another. So at least there's that. He wasn't just approached by some random record label and asked to do a record for a non-existent market. Because that's not something that ever happens, right? Turns out after the release of Terminator 2, Little Eddie Furlong became pretty popular overseas. So popular, in fact, he was approached by a Japanese record label, and in 1992 he released Hold On Tight, an album featuring mostly covers, and, with questionable musicianship all around. Here, I mean, you can't blame Furlong. He wasn't planning on a music career. But I'm sure there was a very enticing offer on the table. The equivalent of a big-name celebrity doing an overseas whiskey ad or something, but, you know, for 15-year-olds. And from what I've found, this was pretty popular over there. There's evidence of music videos and such being shot, but I couldn't find anything complete, you know, outside of a few interview clips. Although I did track down a Korean pressing of the Hold On Tight vinyl, so I guess we'll see if that ever shows up. But Furlong was a certified king as far as the young teen audiences went in Japan and seemingly Korea, and I'm sure he had a good time. This is a very bizarre little record, but it's all just so innocent, so it's okay. And to be honest, this shit kinda slaps. It seems a lot of child actors gave it a go in the 80s, and especially the 90s. You know, whether it was a sincere take or not. But someone who's been doing it as long as they've been acting is none other than OG Triple OG Badass Corey Feldman, who has a string of albums spanning decades and who is still throwing down his motherfucking thing. But more on that this December on Staunch TV's A Very Corey Christmas. Be sure to subscribe. Anyways, one attempt at music I find gets overlooked was not the masterworks of Mr. Feldman, but that of the immortal Corey Haim, who too was full of passion and raw talent and pure love of music. He never did release an official album outside of a hard-to-find CD that I haven't tracked down yet. Stay tuned. But talking to people who knew Corey, he always wanted to make music, even if, you know, it wasn't released to a wide audience. I often wonder if other tracks exist, and where the hell they might be. But with Haim, we have a one-of-a-kind artist. Not only did he prove to be an amazing actor at a very young age, but also showed real promise with his chosen genre of music, the kind of sappy R&B, sexy, groovy stuff. But Corey Haim was also an exceptional painter. So it seems some people were just born to be wild, Corey Haim included. And to be honest, this shit kinda slaps.
You give me the things that I will miss. Oh, baby, I spend
But, you know, in my opinion, the cream of the crop when it comes to child actors making an actual album is Crispin Glover's 1989 opus. The big problem does not equal the solution. The solution equals Let It Be, which was recorded on a short hiatus from acting.
I didn't make a sound, then I turned around and I saw a clown. Had a frown, stood on a mound, started barking like a hound.
The album was produced by comedy rock duo and Dr. Demento alums Barnes & Barnes. The album spawned one single and a music video for the track, Clowny Clown Clown. And the album art would feature bizarre artwork and phrases from Glover's books. And the video and artwork would feature the elusive Reuben Farr, all seemingly being part of a big puzzle. One that if you solved, you could call the hotline number on the back of the album in hopes of guessing right and getting Glover's praises. However, since 2007, the number hasn't worked. I tried. I also haven't figured out the big puzzle, but eh. The album was the pinnacle of an actor breaking the artist's mold. The album is a lot of fun if you never heard it. It's just so weird to think of Crispin Glover going out of his way to do this. There are many, many more examples to go by. Let me know what you think. Who did I miss? How do you feel about Little Eddie Furlong's cover of People Are Strange?
Yeah.
Bar S Hot Dogs. The perfect pink dyed tube shaped meat product on the market. The kids love them. And the missus don't mind either. Add some Bar S official pink dyed tube shaped meat product sauce paste to add some more fun. Hell, they'll drive grandma crazy. A fun time for the entire bloodline. Bar S. The S stands for quality. Dan Pritzer. Add to cart. Reviews of products I've never used. Dunstan Checks In. DVD starring Jason Alexander. Price $7.99. 38 used and new from $1.41. 3 out of 5 people found this review helpful. This is the most vile piece of Nazi propaganda since Leni Riefenstahl's Triumph of the Will. I sat with mouth agape as I watched a young boy be bullied by an ape, whose only mission in life, it seemed, was to rack up unimaginable debt by applying for credit cards in his name, then refusing to answer the phone. There's that fat guy from Seinfeld waddling around doing his best to escape the typecast. And you got that guy who pleasured himself in a porno theater who used to wear a bow tie and have a playhouse at one time. I watched that show. I saw not one play. Lies. I was so angry after watching this garbage that I drove to the Redbox that I rented it from, brandishing a pistol and demanding a refund. The clerk at the Stripes approached me with some sound advice. It isn't this mindless machine's fault that the movie disappointed you. Maybe you should reconnect with your family. I suddenly found myself in a place you couldn't locate with a compass. I put the gun down, gave the clerk a hug, and said, "Thank you. Of all the years in therapy I've been through, you gave the best advice of all." Then I kicked him right in the money maker, and as he lay there in the fetal position clutching his groin, I proceeded to shake the Redbox machine until I got the credit card numbers of all the previous customers. Then I got a burrito and went to bed. Dunstan checks in? Ha! More like Dunstan should check out.
And that's the way it has to be. Now, bring it back, I got that fool. Fool, I don't wanna hear your boy. I think I'm not capable. Well, come here and your face are full of pieces and pieces and pieces and quit.
Spit.
But do we, fellas think very hard, very deeply. Do we wanna get that pussy, 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 pussy cat? Meow, 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 meow. How's that? So, tune into the station. What's my conversation? Can you comprehend? Do you understand the situation? So as I swing you like a merry-go.
Here we go,
yo, go, let me go.
told you. Drive me so crazy, you make my mind go wild. And when I think about you, I can't help but smile. But you still can't fade me, you poopy doopy slavey. I don't want no groupie hoochie who only wants my gravy. So step back off me, cause I'm not soft, see. Girl, you know I love you, but you're killing me softly. Psych, right? Like you thought I was serious. It makes me so furious, why are you so curious? Remember, curiosity killed the kitty cat. You're getting stuffed on more times than a doormat. Sorry, I gotta tell it so rough, but when you're in the industry, remember these words. I told ya.
Oh, yes, I told ya.
As I said, next week's guest, Brian Plato, and a lot of the other extras from Bill and Ted Face the Music will be joining us. It's going to be a Bill and Ted extravaganza. Let me know your thoughts on the latest Bill and Ted movie on Facebook at Lost in the Staunch. You can find me there. You can also find me at Instagram at Eddie Murphy and Eddie Murphy. And of course, email me. Let me know what you think of the show. I'm glad to have listeners, and I love each and every one of you. I want to know who you are. Email me at DerryTigers@gmail.com. That is D-E-R-R-Y Tigers@gmail.com. Thank you so much, and be sure to tune in to ModSnapRadio.com for all the great shows. There's a lot of good shit on here all week long. Be sure to tune in to ModSnapRadio.com. See you next week, folks. Stay lost.
staunch.
Lost in the staunch.
Lost in the staunch.
Carpet day.
Lost in the staunch.
This has been a presentation of the World Generation Podcast Network.